Page 416, Chapter 17, Reconstructing the State. Chapter Preview, Terms. Reconstruction, Freedmen, 13th Amendment, Black Codes, 14th Amendment, Carpetbagger, Scalawag, Ku Klux Klan, 15th Amendment, Redeemer, Poll Tax, Discrimination, White Supremacy, Freedmen's Bureau, Tenant Farming, Sharecropping, Crop Lien, Convict Lease System, Segregate. People: Andrew Johnson, James Johnson, Charles Jones Jenkins, Herschel Johnson, Henry McNeil Turner, William Felton, Alfred Colquitt, Oliver O. Howard. After 4 long years of bloodshed, the U.S. Civil War ended in the late spring of 1865. The southern states were in chaos without stable governments. Crops and buildings lay in ruins in many areas. Soldiers struggled to get home while anxious families waited. Many African Americans set out in search of family or work or simply to exercise their freedom. Many questions faced the nation and the South. How would the two sections of the country be reunited? How would the South's economy be rebuilt? And how would Southerners make their living? What would happen to the almost 4 million slaves who were now free, but who had no land and, in most cases, no education? How would the new Southern society be structured? There were many different opinions on how these questions should be answered. For over a decade, different forces would try to control the direction of the South. In 1865, the North and the South began the difficult work of bringing the Southern states back into the Union. They also had to rebuild the Southern states in all areas of life, politics, the economy, and the society. The North's involvement in these efforts lasted only a few years. By 1877, Northerners and the national government were focused on other issues. The South was left to its own solutions. In this chapter, we will explore the developments in politics, the economy, and the society and culture as Georgia and the rest of the South recovered and rebuilt following the Civil War. This period of Reconstruction from 1865 to 1877 set Georgia on the path it would follow for many decades. Page 418, Section 1, Political Reconstruction. As you read, look for the presidential plans for Reconstruction, the impact of the Black Codes, the actions taken by the state to rejoin the Union, the Reconstruction Amendments, the end of Reconstruction, terms, freedmen, 13th Amendment, Black Codes, 14th Amendment, Carpetbagger, Scalawag, Ku Klux Klan, 15th Amendment, Redeemer, Poll Tax, Discrimination. One of the major issues at the end of the war was how the Union and the former Confederacy would be recombined. The state had considered itself a separate nation during the war. If that logic was followed, then it was a conquered nation at the end of the war and could have been considered territory. However, the United States government had not considered secession to be legal, so it did not look at the South as a conquered nation, but an area that had been in rebellion. At the end of the war, it no longer was. Getting the former rebel states reunited with the northern states and constructing loyal governments in those states was the task facing the national government. The return of Georgia to the Union is a confusing story because two sides were trying to gain power. One side wanted Georgia after the war to be as much like Georgia before the war as possible. The other side wanted Georgia to go in a new direction. For several years, power went back and forth between them. Finally, those wanting less change gained power for good. Presidential Reconstruction. Before the Civil War ended, President Abraham Lincoln had begun preparing for the South to return to its proper relationship with the rest of the country. As he said in his second inaugural address in March 1865, he wanted Americans to bind up the nation's wounds. Lincoln believed that this process, called Reconstruction, should be directed by the president. His goal was a quick and easy reunion. He was willing to pardon almost any rebel Southerner who renounced secession and accept the end of slavery. Under Lincoln's Reconstruction plan, after 10% of the voters in a former Confederate state had taken an oath of loyalty to the United States, the state could begin to form a new government. Many Northern leaders thought that Lincoln's 10% plan made it too easy for ex-Confederates to return and that it did not call for any guarantees for rights for the freedmen, the newly freed slaves. In July 1864, the U.S. Congress offered a plan that required more. At least 50% of the former Confederates in each state would have to take the loyalty oath, and each new state constitution would have to be written by those who had not participated in the rebellion. Congress's plan also contained guarantees of rights for African Americans. Lincoln did not sign the Wade-Davis Bill, which outlined Congress's plan, so it did not become law. Lincoln continued to conduct Reconstruction in his own way, but he never had the chance to see it through. On April 14, 1865, Southerner John Wilkes Booth entered the Ford Theater in Washington, D.C., where President and Mrs. Lincoln were watching a play, and shot the president. Lincoln died a few hours later. Vice President Andrew Johnson became the president. He had been an interesting choice as Lincoln's vice presidential running mate in the 1864 election. He was a Democrat, while Lincoln had been a Republican. He was also from the South, a Tennessean, who had opposed secession and the war, which he blamed on the planter class of the South. Like Lincoln, Johnson also wanted a quick and easy reconstruction for the South. Since Congress had adjourned in March 1865 and would not meet again until December, Johnson believed he had several months to carry out his own Reconstruction plan. That plan included renouncing both secession and the debts owed by the Confederate government and ratifying the 13th Amendment to the United States Constitution. That amendment made it unconstitutional for anyone to be held in involuntary servitude, which was another way of saying slavery. Although Johnson disliked Southern planters, he pardoned most of those who applied and returned to them lands that had been taken away in the war. In June 1865, President Johnson appointed Columbus attorney and Unionist James Johnson as provisional governor. That October, white male voters elected delegates to a state constitutional convention. Many of those elected to the 1865 convention had initially opposed secession. The delegates passed the president's requirements, although some did not like having to do it. For example, they repealed the ordinance of secession, but refused to say that they did not have the right to secede. These delegates also wrote a new constitution. It outlined citizens' rights in Article I, and in following articles, established the executive, legislative, and judicial branches of government and outlined their powers. Article 5 held miscellaneous provisions. One provision listed the laws in force in Georgia as those of the Constitution of the United States, the laws and treaties of the United States government, unless they violated the U.S. Constitution, the national laws, or the Constitution of 1865 that they were writing. There were some restrictive provisions. One said a requirement for voting was to be a free white male. Another said that no one could hold office unless he was eligible to vote. A third provision made the marriage of a white person to a person of African descent illegal. That November, voters chose Charles Jones Jenkins of Richmond County as governor and elected a new General Assembly. This legislature, after some debate, ratified the 13th Amendment. Many white Georgians, like other white Southerners, thought that the status of the freedmen would be similar to the status of free blacks before the war. The new state constitution said that the General Assembly had to provide by law for the government of free persons of color. As a result, the legislature passed black codes, laws that applied specifically to the freedmen. Georgia's black codes were milder than those in other southern states, but they still denied freedmen the right to serve on juries, testify against whites, or marry a white person. Nor were black men allowed to vote. In special elections in the fall of 1865, white Southerners, who considered themselves reconstructed under Johnson's plan, elected representatives to the U.S. House. Their state legislatures chose senators. Many of those chosen were ex-Confederate military officers or former members of the Confederate government. Georgia was no different. It chose as its two senators, Alexander Stevens, former Vice President of the Confederacy, and Herschel Johnson, a former Confederate senator. Many Northerners, including those in the national government, saw the election results and the South's passage of black codes as insults to the many Union soldiers who had fought and died in the Civil War. They believed that white Southerners were trying to recreate a system close to slavery with the black codes. Northern senators and congressmen also believed that men who only months before were leading the war against the Union should not become representatives in the U.S. government so quickly. Congressional Reconstruction. The Republican-controlled U.S. Congress sent the Southerners home and began a takeover of the Reconstruction process. Overriding Johnson's veto, Congress passed a Civil Rights Act in 1866, guaranteeing rights to the freedmen. That summer, Congress passed the 14th Amendment to the Constitution, making anyone born or naturalized in the United States a citizen of the country with certain citizenship guarantees. The amendment prevented any person who had taken an oath as a federal or state official and then engaged in rebellion from holding high office in the U.S. government. States were also forbidden from repaying the Confederacy's debts or compensating owners for freed slaves. These actions began a fight between President Johnson and the Republicans in Congress for control of Reconstruction. The elections for the U.S. House in the fall of 1866, in which the ex-Confederate states did not participate, showed that the public supported Congressional Reconstruction. Southern whites remained defiant, however, and all of the former Confederate states except Tennessee rejected the 14th Amendment. Tennessee alone was readmitted to the Union. In March 1867, the other former Confederate states, including Georgia, were divided into five military districts, each of which was occupied by U.S. troops. General John Pope was appointed as the first military commander of the district that included Georgia. The U.S. military commanders of the districts oversaw voter registration in each state, including registration of the male freedmen. Women were still not allowed to vote. In April 1867, over 100,000 whites and almost 100,000 African Americans registered to vote. Eligible voters then chose representatives to state conventions to write new state constitutions that guaranteed all men the right to vote. The voters in the states then had to ratify, approve, the new state constitutions and the 14th Amendment to the U.S. Constitution. The Constitutional Convention of 1867. Governor Charles J. Jenkins had been elected in November 1865 after having taken part in the convention that drafted the 1865 Constitution. He had worked hard in his 2 years as governor to get Georgia's finances in order. In 1867, the governor went to Washington to ask the Supreme Court to stop military reconstruction. He was unsuccessful. Back in Georgia, many conservative white politicians urged voters to vote no on whether to have another constitutional convention. Many conservative whites boycotted the vote for the constitutional convention. For African-American males, this was the first time they were able to vote. They and some Republican whites supported it. Voters agreed to the convention by a vote of over 100,000 for and a little over 4,000 against. Of the 169 delegates elected, 37 were African Americans. Most of the convention delegates were members of the New Republican Party of Georgia. This party's members included African Americans, Northerners who had come to the South, and some Southern whites. Conservative whites had nicknames for these last two groups. The Northerners were called carpetbaggers, and the Southern whites who became Republicans were known as scalawags. Both names were meant to be negative. General George Meade became the military commander in Georgia in January 1868. When he said the state had to pay the $40,000 cost for the convention, Governor Jenkins refused. Meade removed him from office. Jenkins then left the state, taking with him both the seal of the governor's office and his official documents. The state treasurer took $400,000 of the state's money to a bank in New York. Jenkins went overseas, where he stayed until 1870. Meanwhile, the new state constitution, the delegates wrote, was a progressive one. One of the most important features was the requirement that the Georgia legislature establish a system of free public schools for all of Georgia's children, black and white. This Constitution of 1868 also guaranteed African American men the right to vote and allowed married women to control their own property. African American legislators. Georgia's voters approved the new Constitution and elected African Americans to both houses of the General Assembly. One of the African American men elected was Henry McNeil Turner, a minister at the African Methodist Episcopal Church in Macon. Born in South Carolina as a free person, Turner felt called to the ministry. During the war, he became the first African American chaplain in the U.S. Army. After the war, he, along with many African Americans, had joined the African Methodist Episcopal Church. This northern denomination helped establish Methodist churches for African Americans in the South. Turner came to Georgia after the war and was active in politics, serving as a delegate to the 1867 Constitutional Convention and later in the legislature. One of the first acts of the new legislature was to ratify the 14th Amendment to the U.S. Constitution in July 1868. With this requirement met, Congress allowed Georgia back into the Union. The state's elected senators and representatives, however, had to wait until the next Congress met to take their seats. Thinking they were safely back in the Union, the Democrats in the Georgia legislature, with the cooperation of about 30 white Republicans, removed the African American legislators from both houses of the General Assembly. They claimed that having the right to vote did not mean that African Americans had the right to hold office. Black leaders were horrified. They felt betrayed by the Republicans, whom they had trusted. Henry M. Turner spoke before leaving the House. "No man has ever been more deceived than I have been. The treachery has shaken my confidence more than anything that has come under my observation from the day of my birth." Turner called for a meeting of the expelled legislators in Macon. They founded the Civil and Political Rights Association and turned to the national government for help. Tunis Campbell and others traveled to Washington, D.C., to plead their cases with U.S. senators and congressmen. the Ku Klux Klan. Meanwhile, the summer of 1868 and the year 1869 were periods of violence. With the beginning of military reconstruction, a terrorist organization known as the Ku Klux Klan, KKK, came to Georgia. Founded by former Confederate General Nathan Bedford Forrest in Tennessee in 1866, the Klan became an organization that tried to frighten those it considered enemies, carpetbaggers, scalawags, and African Americans. By the summer of 1868, the KKK had spread throughout Georgia, especially in the rural areas. The Klan worked mainly at the local level, where local leaders picked their targets and planned their violent acts. Ku Kluxers, as they were sometimes called, used intimidation and outright violence to try to defeat the Republican Party, maintain white control, and control African Americans both in their work and their personal lives. Between the spring election of 1868 and the presidential election that fall, the KKK was very active, and many African Americans and white Republicans became too frightened to vote. African Americans who ran for public office were in constant danger. Political participation was not the only activity that might draw the anger of the Klan. African Americans who did well economically or whites who helped them might be beaten. Blacks who did not move over on the sidewalk for whites to pass, or who wore clothing considered too fancy, often found themselves targeted. Any behavior that whites saw as uppity could result in a visit from the Ku Kluxers. The Klan saw itself as keeping African Americans in their place. The fall 1868 election was characterized by violence, including a terrible incident in September 1868 that became known as the Camilla Riot. A group of blacks marched from Albany to Camilla to join a Republican rally. They were fired upon by whites in the Camilla Town Square and then chased down as they tried to return to Albany. Several African Americans died and many were injured. Military Reconstruction again. The U.S. House of Representatives responded to the actions of the Georgia legislature by removing Georgia's representatives in March. The Senate did not even allow Georgia's senators to take their seats. In December 1869, after months of Klan violence, and upon the recommendation of Governor Rufus Bullock, who had been elected governor in 1868, the U.S. government reestablished military rule in Georgia, while Georgia underwent further reconstruction. Georgia was the only state that had to be readmitted twice. After being placed back under military reconstruction, Georgia joined the three southern states that had not yet been readmitted. Georgia and these states were now pressured to ratify the 15th Amendment. That amendment guaranteed that no one could be denied the right to vote because of race or color. This is sometimes called the Voting Rights Amendment. The writers of the 14th Amendment had tried to encourage the southern states to allow African American voting. That amendment provided that any group of adult males who were left out of voting were not to be counted as part of the state's population when determining how many representatives that state would have in the U.S. House. Because 3/5 of the slaves had been counted in the population before the Civil War, not allowing African American men to vote now would mean fewer representatives. That provision, however, had not ensured voting rights for African Americans. The 15th Amendment did. In fact, when ratified by the states, this amendment opened voting to African Americans not only in the South, but also in the northern states that had not previously allowed them to vote. Because the amendment did not say that voting could not be denied based on sex, however, women of all races still did not get the right to vote. This was a disappointment to those who had worked hard to see women included. In January 1870, the new military commander of Georgia, General Alfred H. Terry, restored the seats of the African Americans who had been removed from the General Assembly in 1868. He then removed 29 whites who were not eligible to hold office under the Military Reconstruction Act because they had fought against the Union. With the ex-Confederates removed, the majority of this new legislature favored the 15th Amendment and ratified it. Congress then readmitted Georgia to the Union for a second time in July 1870. Among the congressmen chosen for the December to March session of the U.S. Congress was African-American Jefferson Franklin Long of Macon. Although a slave before the Civil War, Long was a tailor whose owner had allowed him to operate his own shop. As a free person at the end of the war, he did well economically, became an active member of the Republican Party, and traveled throughout the state urging African Americans to register to vote. Long became the first African American to make a speech on the floor of the U.S. House of Representatives when he urged the House to reject a bill that would change the oath required of ex-Confederates. Long did not think it should be easier for these men to hold political office. Another election marred by violence took place in December 1870. Democrats won a majority of both houses of the General Assembly, although their terms did not begin until fall 1871. Governor Bullock asked the U.S. government to place Georgia under military rule once again, but this time he was unsuccessful. Accused of corruption by his opponents who were returning to power, Governor Bullock left the state in 1871. Democrat James Smith was elected in a special December 1871 gubernatorial election. Redeemers and Independents. In 1872, with a Democrat elected as governor and Democratic majorities in both houses of the General Assembly, Georgia was back in the control of conservative white Southerners. They believed they had redeemed or saved the state from the North's Reconstruction policies. These Democrats became known as the Redeemers. With Redeemers in control, political gains that African Americans had made began to disappear. In 1872, only 4 African Americans were elected to the General Assembly, compared to 32 in 1868. Governor Smith and other Democratic leaders set about reversing some of the changes made during Reconstruction. Also in 1872, former Governor Jenkins, who had come back to Georgia in 1870, returned the items he had fled with in 1868. He trusted them to the government controlled by Redeemers. Some Democrats split from the party and became independents. In 1874, the voters of the 7th District, located in North Georgia, elected independent Dr. William Felton to the U.S. House of Representatives. Many in that northern area, which had more yeoman farmers than planters, had been anti-secession. They re-elected Felton as an independent in 1876, so the independent movement had some success for a short time. The end of Reconstruction. In 1876, the Republicans hoped that they might have a better chance in the election. Their nominee for governor was Jonathan Norcross, who had been mayor of Atlanta before the Civil War. However, Norcross lost to Democrat Alfred Colquitt by almost 70,000 votes. The Republican Party was losing influence in Georgia politics. As we will see in the next chapter, many Republicans began to support the independents in the 1880s because they had so little power of their own. In 1877, some Georgians wanted a new constitution. Even though the last constitution had been written only a few years before, many ex-Confederates saw it as the work of Republicans. In June 1877, Georgians voted for a new constitutional convention by a small margin. Robert Toombs and Charles Jones Jenkins led the convention that kept some of the aspects of the Constitution of 1868, but also made some significant changes. The new Constitution set up a weaker state government and increased the power of the rural areas of Georgia. Representation in the Georgia House was divided so that the top 6 counties in population had 3 representatives each. The next 26 counties had two each, and the remaining 105 had one. With this division, the rural counties could always outvote the urban counties. The judicial and executive branches became weaker, while more power went to the legislature. The governor lost the power to appoint judges. That power went to the General Assembly. The governor's term was reduced from 4 years to two. 6-year terms were established for the justices of the Georgia Supreme Court. The Constitution also established a poll tax, which had to be paid in order for a citizen to vote. That made it difficult for poorer people to vote, affecting both poor whites and most African Americans. The year that Georgia completed its new constitution is the year that Reconstruction officially ended. In the early 1870s, the Republicans of the North had hoped to stop the violence of the KKK by passing the Ku Klux Klan Act. They also tried to stop discrimination in public places by making it illegal in the 1875 Civil Rights Act. Discrimination is the unfair treatment of a person or a group because of prejudice. But enforcement of those two laws was not possible in states where the Redeemers controlled law enforcement and the judicial system. The North was losing its will to change the South. On the national level, the results of the 1876 presidential election were disputed when the electoral votes in several states were challenged. The U.S. House of Representatives established an electoral commission to determine the outcome. An agreement known as the Compromise of 1877 settled the election. Republican Rutherford B. Hayes became president by agreeing to remove the remaining U.S. troops in the South, thus ending Reconstruction. The South once again controlled its own politics. Reviewing the section. 1. Define freedmen, black codes, carpetbagger, scalawag. 2. How did President Johnson's plan for Reconstruction differ from Lincoln's plan? 3. Why do you think the majority of Southern states refused to ratify the 14th Amendment to the U.S. Constitution? 4. If you had been a freedman in this period, would you have gone to the polls to vote? Why or why not? Page 429, Georgia Portraits, Tunis Campbell. Born in 1812 in New Jersey as a free black, Tunis Campbell was educated in the North, became an African Methodist Episcopal minister, and earned his living in hotels in New York and Boston. He even wrote a handbook for hotel workers. He also became an abolitionist. In 1863, U.S. Secretary of War Edwin Stanton sent Campbell to work among the slaves in coastal South Carolina. Freed slaves there had begun to settle on islands that whites had abandoned during the war. When Congress established the Freedmen's Bureau in 1865, Campbell moved to Georgia as an agent to oversee Georgia's 5 sea islands. Under Campbell's leadership, the African American community on St. Catherine's Island formed its own democratic government. The residents cultivated the farmland, began their own schools, and established a militia for protection. Campbell's wife and sons came from the North to teach, and Campbell put his own money into helping fund the schools on the islands. After the war, when those lands were returned to the original owners, Campbell arranged for the purchase of a 1,250-acre plantation in McIntosh County from a sympathetic northerner. He divided the land into parcels and established a Black Land Owners Association. When the Republicans came into power in 1867, Campbell became active in state Republican politics, the beginning of a remarkable and controversial political career in Reconstruction, Georgia. He registered African Americans to vote, became a justice of the peace, and served as a delegate to the convention that wrote the Constitution of 1868. With the new government in place, his district elected him to the Georgia Senate. When the white conservatives removed black members from the Georgia Assembly, Campbell protested that the removal was illegal, unconstitutional, unjust, and oppressive. Campbell and his son, who had been removed from the Georgia House, traveled to Washington to protest the action. In January 1870, under U.S. supervision, Campbell and the other African-American legislators resumed their seats. He introduced 15 bills to try to guarantee African-American rights and equality. In Darien, Campbell used his position as Justice of the Peace to protect African-Americans, even having whites arrested if they abused blacks. In his area, the African-Americans were well organized, both to participate in politics and to protect themselves and Campbell from white threats. Afraid that physical harm to Campbell would result in an uprising, whites resorted to other methods to get rid of him. According to historian Russell Duncan, these included frauds, jury tampering, and unrelenting persecution by a racist judge. In January 1876, the 63-year-old Campbell ended up in the convict lease system. His supposed offense was false imprisonment of a white man. When he was released a year later, Campbell moved to Washington, D.C. Without Campbell's leadership in McIntosh County, planter whites regained control. The African-American community, however, remained united and continued to elect a black representative for many years.